This is for Ina and anybody else who doesn't come. Good morning, everybody. It is a tremendous honor and a pleasure to have my parents, Rabbi Shammai and Jeanette Cantor, here. They had great mercy on me when they accepted to move to Phoenix, so I really appreciate them being here. Okay, vegetarian chili and then rules. Okay.
Introduce us?
Yes, please. We're going to go around and everybody will say their names and then we'll start.
Hello, I'm Connie. Welcome to the group.
I'm Julie.
I'm Madeline.
Ilana.
Sure. Madeline.
Dale.
Mary.
Shammai.
Ruth.
Jenny.
Harriet.
Jeanette.
Wendy. Ilana. Okay. So, vegetarian chili. To the editor of Cuisine, Donna's Ladle is charmed to be asked to contribute a recipe to your forthcoming issue, Crowd Pleasing. Okay, what is the function of charmed in that sentence?
Sarcasm.
Totally. You would say we're pleased, we're delighted, we're this, we're that. Charmed, it has an edge to it. And crowd pleasing? What does crowd pleasing mean?
Volume.
Could mean, because you want to, when you're crowd pleasing, either you're very in touch with your audience, or you are pandering to, and changing your, whatever it is that you're offering.
I just moved someone else too.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Ruth. Thank you. We are not exactly a restaurant, but we can certainly use your guest chef's fee of $250 to buy shopping carts and bras for our own guests and a sparker to light the burners on the stove. Josie's eyebrows are only growing back now. Are now only growing back. So what happened to Josie?
Blew up.
Yeah, so something singed off her eyebrows, and so we could use the money.
The stove did.
To prepare vegetarian chili, I soak beans the night before. The next morning, after opening the church basement door, yelling at the mice, turning on the stove, and welcoming the patrons who have huddled all night on the portico, I start cooking the beans. Then I follow these directions. Sort donated vegetables, reject those too moldy to be identified, do not let Marianne near the knives. Okay, so what have we learned so far about this woman from Donna's Ladle, who actually is Donna, but we don't know that quite yet.
It's hardly the audience for Cuisine.
Yes, this is, she had a good idea, actually, to try to get this $250, because clearly they need it, but not quite the audience that Cuisine usually addresses. Great. What else?
She's got a lot going on in addition to cooking.
Right. So, she's multitasking. She's doing all of these things. And it's not like, I'm also watching my child in a confined space, while I do something else. This is don't let Marianne get near the knives. So she has reject those too moldy to be identified.
Everything comes donations.
Yes, everything's donations. And so, they have to take out what's moldy and take what's good. So this is not your usual scene in a gourmet kitchen.
He identifies her audience by saying she can use the money to buy shopping carts and bras.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
The shopping carts not to put their food, but to live off of as
right,
a homeless.
Right, right, right.
And bras.
Yeah.
They have a lot of pets.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yelling at the mice. So we had this when? We had the word commensal. Somebody was saying.
For the last story.
Yes, right. So we live with the mice, but the mice tell you something about the place as well. And the patrons who huddle all night on the portico. Sorry about the parking. It's. Okay. Heat oil in pan, saute veggies, persuade Akisha's children not to drown dolls in cauldrons, sit with Bridget crying over the baby who died, mix eggs, cornmeal, and milk in likely ratio and set in oven, do something about Gretel's raw feet, combine veggies, bean, tomato juice, chili powder, skimpy, extend with yesterday's meatloaf. It's mostly vegetables, to tell the truth. Chili and cornbread will serve 75 generously, 50 very generously, usually serves 100 who are more or less pleased. Okay, so they stretch food as far as it can go. How is this one page a short story? Because she considers it a story on her own. It could have been the first scene in Rules, but it's not.
It tells you a lot about the soup kitchen.
Unbelievable what she can pack into one page.
She's more than a chef.
She's more than a chef.
Caretaker, caregiver,
right?
Nurse, doctor,
right? Psychologist.
Mm-hmm. She does
Police
everything.
Woman.
Clever writer.
Charity.
Mm-hmm. right.
Being charitable.
Right.
What I can't get over is the church would allow the mice. She wouldn't complain about it.
But we have church mice. But we have church mice.
That's a double.
Yes, right. Go ahead.
Because she starts one task, someone comes in, she has to take care of something else. So her recipe includes all these tangent things that she has to do at the same time.
Right. So that will account for a likely ratio. Can't be exact here. Right. I've got too many things to do. So we'll pour a little this, we'll pour a little this, and we've got our vegetarian chili.
She also does fundraising for it. I mean, obviously she's applying for the $250. So right. In addition to everything else, she's trying to raise money to support the adventure.
Right. And she's extremely resourceful to think of doing this and to think of sending this in as a recipe. But that's Edith Perlman's whole point, one of the themes of the book, right? It's a recipe, but underneath recipes are stories. Or in between recipes are stories. But you have to know how to look at the recipe, to kind of bring out the story. Here she does it for us, right? But she wants us to look at the details of ordinary life to be able to tell the stories of extraordinary people, right? So there's an ordinary sort of recipe, but clearly she's an extraordinary person in what she's doing. Other thoughts?
But she sets up the whole contrast in one sentence, because cuisine is a whole other world from
what's really going on.
Right. So the contrast tells us all we need to know.
And she's also gotten us from soup, which is pretty dilute, to chili, which is robust. I mean, so she's gotten us to think of the soup kitchen as more than just the bare minimal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we could have just soup, but no, she makes chili out of this soup.
Right.
And it's much more, it's not so skimpy.
It's not so skimpy, particularly when we add yesterday's meatloaf.
Right.
But it means that we're going to use everything that we have, and we're going to make it go as far as it can possibly go. Because we're going to feed 100 when other people can only feed 50.
The story about stone soup.
So she's a woman on a mission, and seems to be an unbelievable resource for the people who partake of Donna's ladle. So let's move into Rules. Unless any other thoughts on vegetarian chili? Okay. What are Rules for, and why do we need them? Or what are rules? Yes.
Boundaries.
They're boundaries, okay. And why do we need them?
To create order, to keep some sort of order.
Okay, so order, structure, guidance.
And to keep peace.
This is a very diverse group of people here, and they're always changing, and you need something to keep everyone on sort of an even keel.
Okay. So, so I'm used to this, but I'm going to tell everybody, if you can speak loud so that we, you know, those of us who have trouble hearing can hear. So, yeah.
I've never been accused of that.
maybe it's that you're, I'm not used to being so far back. Right.
So it's not just that it creates order and rules. I think the story takes place beyond that. It's not in the realm of what's orderly and what's organized and what's structured. This is way beyond that. It's totally out of that box.
Right, but if you don't have any sort of rules, you don't say you can't hit or you can't do this or that, then it'd be total chaos. So it has to give some sort of frame of reference for the, these diverse group of people to survive together.
Right.
Is there any significance in her last name? I was trying to
Crown and Shield. Yeah. Her Majesty is in her her Majesty is in her protective nature, is what I got for it, from it. Yeah.
Shield. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crown and Shield. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So we're gonna see different kinds of rules. We're going to learn a lot about rules and when they work and when they don't work and what are good rules and what are completely ineffective rules. We're gonna learn about all of that. Okay. One autumn, Donna's Ladle, a soup kitchen for women operating out of the basement of Godolphin Unitarian Church. So we're in Godolphin, which is our town of choice, modeled on Brookline, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Became all at once everybody's favorite cause. There are fashions in charity just as in bed slippers, sniffed Josie, who had been working as a volunteer since the Ladle's beginning 6 years earlier. Don't count on this popularity to last, Donna. Donna never counted on anything to last. Okay, so what do we get from here about Donna's Ladle, about the whole situation?
Well, Unitarian Church is open to everyone. It's not narrowly defining why would you walk in the door. Really, a Unitarian church is sort of open to everyone. Find
right.
your place.
Right. So it's a welcoming place. It's housing them. Mm-hmm. It's housing them. Great. What else?
She's been doing it for a while.
Yes. Well, so Josie's, right. So Josie's been there 6.5 years. And if Donna is the person in charge or the founder, then she's been there for a good amount of time. And they're also telling us, as my mom said, about charity, right? And we saw it in the last story, right, about the large lady, that there are times we feel more intensely about charity. There are times we feel less intensely. There are times where certain charities become the favorite charity. And but one rule of this is that popularity doesn't last, right? That's a rule. Okay. Somebody
about charity.
Yes?
Charity isn't always charity. And there are many indications in this story about that.
Yeah, we'll see what is charity and what isn't. Okay. Connie, do you want to read Donna again from that paragraph?
Donna never counted on anything to last, but she was grateful for the new help. A group from a local synagogue undertook to deliver cooked delicacies. The members of Godolphin Helping Hands raked each other's closets for clothing and contributions. Maeve, a nearby Catholic women's college, posted the ladle's flyer on its bulletin board. As a result, a few eager students appeared almost every day. Some needed first-hand material for term papers on poverty. The others showed up out of simple good-heartedness.
Great. Okay, great. So we have different participants in Donna's Ladle. Deliver cooked delicacies. So the shul, what does the shul deliver?
Knishes,
which they call meat pastries, right? The shul delivers the meat pastries. And then we have Godolphin Helping Hands for clothing. Anybody know what Maeve means? Maeve. I didn't until I looked it up. Maeve means she who intoxicates. I don't know how that is connected, except that it's very funny because it's a women's Catholic college. Right. So to be called Maeve is pretty funny. Okay.
I like that they're raking each other's closets. Yes. They're not raking their own closets.
They're helping in.
Right. So they're... Right, but hopefully they get everybody. And what about the students?
Well, some are there for other reasons, right? For their materials on their research. Right. And some show up just for tikkun.
Right. So this is the reality, which is tzedakah is done for many reasons. And, you know, some of them are altruistic, and some of them are the name on the plate, and some of them are, you know, the firsthand research. But, you know, that realism of, we know everybody's not here for the same reason, but does it, you know, at least Jewishly, that doesn't matter as long as you do it, right? Okay, so the other showed out of simple good-heartedness. Julie, Mother Teresa?
Mother Teresa in designer jeans, said Josie privately to Donna. But to the Maeve student, Josie was a model of patience. Repairing the Cuisinart whenever they broke it, and demonstrating a restrained kindness toward the guests that the girls meant to emulate. Really, they did. They just couldn't help overreacting to the tragic tales they heard. They were frequently in tears. Their eyes, even when red with weeping, were large and lovely.
Okay, so we learn about the students. So what is this telling us about this? And Josie, who is kind of criticizing them when they're not there, you know, is a model of patience with them when they're there.
Maybe they come in a little naive and idealistic.
Right, right. You know, they're gonna help, and you know, the people who have been there for a long time, you know, they've heard many, many stories, but when it, you know, if you're living some suburban existence and you go to the soup kitchen for the first time, it's gonna hit you. But their eyes, even when red with weeping, were large and lovely. So they were beautiful, even in this situation. Julie, keep going.
Those kids are prettier at that age than I ever thought of being, Donna remarked at a staff meeting. Is it their faith? Beth said, it's their smiles, all those buck teeth bursting out at you. And she smiled her own small, sweet crescent. Orthodontia could be a cruel mistake. Pam went further, grinning like a schoolboy. Orthodontia is child abuse.
So here we have Donna, Beth, and Pam are the three women who run Donna's Ladle. And and so what's going on here in this little interchange?
We're gossiping about the Maeve girls.
Right, right. So we're talking about the Maeve girls, and we're kind of joking a little bit at their expense, maybe.
Like maybe they're a little too perfect?
Yeah, or you remember that with the large lady, you know, there was the gallows humor. And here, you know, if you work with, you know, very serious situations, you've got to find the humor in it. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to sustain
it. But there's plenty of abuse going on in the story.
Right, right. And orthodontia is not one of the forms, right? Right. So it's
our... rich versus the needy.
Yes, right. Yes. So orthodontia, it's like Ilana, a cousin of mine who Ilana knows, she calls it rich people's problems.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Rich people's problems. Right, right. So, okay. Madeline?
Her colleagues laughed at this distortion. They were not caseworkers, not sociologists, not child advocates. They were just the staff of the Ladle, three overworked young women. But they had seen children who had been abused. They had broken bread with the abusers. They had witnessed and put a stop to beatings by enraged mothers. You can't hit anybody here, they each knew how to say in a voice both authoritative and uncensuring. A few weeks ago, Pam, turning white with fury hours after the event, reported to the others that she had interrupted Concepta peppering her grandson, a niño of 18 months.
Okay, so pause here for a second. First of all, is it too warm in here? You're okay? We're okay? A little warm?
Yeah.
Yes? No? Okay, if it's okay, it's fine with me. Okay. So,
are you warm?
Yeah, but I have a sweater on, so I'm fine. I'm fine. Okay, so three overworked women. They're not caseworkers. They're not sociologists. They're not child advocates. Why the not?
Because they're not trained in how to handle these situations. They've had to learn on the job.
Right. So they're not trained. And even people who are not trained can save the world. Right. You know, you don't... Right.
And they have no legal authority either.
Yes.
So then everything they do has to be done by their own ability to persuade and intervene.
Right.
I was surprised by the description of them as young women. Yeah. Yeah. I somehow was picturing them more middle-aged.
Yeah, me too.
Me too, yeah.
Well, but
I
call
young.
Alana a young woman. we don't know what perspective
that Edith
Perlman is writing from. I mean,
But from a neutral perspective, from an objective perspective, which is how I took it, they, you know,
20s or 30s,
maybe is
what she means, 20s.
Yeah,
30s.
I would think.
Right.
But they were also uncensoring.
Yes.
And to be able to be both authoritative and uncensoring simultaneously says another thing about the tone of this whole place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's very hard to do.
Right.
But that's an interesting point, and in a way, what she's doing is doing the rule.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
This is the one rule that's effective, right? They really don't let anybody hit. I mean, you know, they stop it if it's happening. This is the one rule. Nobody hits. And that's something very important about rules. Excuse me. You have to keep them simple, and you have to keep them a small number.
And you also have to know when to...
Right. When to obey your own rules, and when the rules have to change, and when the rules have to be bent.
And they have consequences.
Yes, and the rules have consequences. Right, yeah.
I think what you might have been saying, Connie, is that... What you might have been saying, Connie, is that there are rules for the owners... Or the staff too that they have to adhere to. Not that it's be uncensoring, be authoritative. I mean, that's how they need to be. And if one of them is turning white with fury, she's holding it in until she can sit down. And so, those rules among themselves have to be adhered to.
Right. Should be. She's showing great self restraint. What's being done to the kid?
Pepper.
She's pouring pepper. Who would have thought?
Oh,
Dale would have thought, right.
Now, have you heard of it? I have seen it.
You've seen it.
Seriously? Because pepper is available.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
You know, so if, I mean...
Is it any, like, is it supposed to have any... No.
Does
she's
burn?
She's
The burns, it gets into the eyes.
Oh, I'm sure the eyes.
Needs damage. Yeah. Right. Right. Mm.
But was she peppering him because she was trying to... She was being mean to him, or was she peppering him because she was...
She couldn't hit him. She had to do something.
She knew she couldn't hit him.
Right.
But she was peppering him.
That's not what she said.
Because the rules in her particular neighborhood accepted that kind of behavior.
Well, yeah, but they accepted hitting, too.
Right, they accepted
she
hitting.
She was peppering there because she couldn't hit them.
Right. She couldn't hit them.
I thought she was nuts.
That's what I mean.
Right.
She's just
throwing pepper on
it. She was drunk.
Right. She was drunk.
I've also seen mustering.
Oh, yeah.
Tabasco. I make these things up.
I've heard of people putting Tabasco on kids.
That you can understand the immediate effect of.
Mustard is another thing people use.
Right. Julie said that she's heard of putting Tabasco on a child's tongue. Okay, Ilana?
That's modern day soap.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so we are up to...
Wait a minute, I don't agree with that.
Go ahead.
I don't agree that she was doing this meanly, because it said, we're only having fun, I dandled them. I was playing with them. I had to look up dandle, because I didn't know what that word meant. Mm-hmm. It was like rocking, playing with them affectionately. So...
No, she didn't dandle them. The mother did. That was Pam. Pam.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Never mind. Yeah.
You're right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Never mind. Peppering him, asked Donna. Peppering him with what? Peppering him with pepper. She had him on her lap, and she was shaking the pepper jar over him as if he were a pizza. I don't think any got into his eyes, but I wanted to strangle the bitch. Pam bit her lip and bent her curly head. What happened next? Donna mildly inquired. I said, please stop that, Concepta. You can't hurt people here. And I sat down beside her, and she handed the kid over with a giggle. We were only having fun, she told me. I dandled him, and he stopped crying, and after a while, I handed him back. What else could I do? Not a thing, said Beth softly, her plump little hand stirring in her lap. Not a damn thing, said Donna.
Okay, so what do we learn about both the situation and Donna, Pam, and Beth?
They support each other.
So they support each other. And, you know, and they vent a little bit to each other.
Mm-hmm. They're also realistic about what the limits of their authority. Effectiveness and authority are.
Right. And that can be frustrating, not a damn thing. But very good on knowing boundaries.
Well,
right?
She also intervened and took the kid.
Right. So rule number one, you can't hit. Rule number two, you can't hurt people here. So that was why that the baby would now be handed over, because that's another rule. And then she said, we're only having fun. So the great restraint on their parts to give the child back when they know this mother is the kind of mother that's going to pour pepper. And yet they know they have to.
But there's something very interesting, because she said she handed the kid over with a giggle. And she tells you that Concepta is not aware that she's using abusive behavior with the child.
Could be.
I actually sort of agree with that. I thought that it was just, it's her grandson, so it's an elderly woman,
right,
who I thought was just like a little out of it, and this was, you know, she's having fun with the baby, was throwing. Now, I mean, they see abuse all the time, and also, you know, if you see abuse all the time, you just see everything as abuse. It could have been misdirected playing, too.
But she came in, drunk, not drinking.
She was drunk.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll leave that question for now. Reporting incidents to the authorities was out of the question. Another rule, right? They would have loved to. They would have loved to, but otherwise the ladle... Nobody would come, and they wouldn't be able to do the good work that they're doing. Donna's ladle rarely knew the last name of its guests, nor even their real first names if they chose to glide in under nom de guerre. What's a nom de guerre?
Warrior name.
A warrior name, right? Because this is a fight, right? Their addresses, if they had any, were their own business. This peppering was thus far an isolated event. Concepta usually came in alone drunk, but not drinking. You can't drink here was another rule. Shouting and doping were also forbidden. All four rules were frequently broken. Okay, so we have this thing, you know, there are rules that are meant to be broken, sometimes for a good reason. But here, you know, that's not realistic. Right? That would not be, you know, and so she admits that. We're in the mind of Donna here, right? All four rules were frequently broken. That's what happens. That, you know, you're not gonna get no shouting. It's not gonna happen. And so they're realistic about it. I'd suggested earlier, just skipped a little bit, but Concepta didn't want her Nino anywhere near Ricky Mendoza, and Ricky was in the children's room that morning, and Ricky has AIDS. As far as the staff knew, Ricky did not have AIDS, but the staff didn't know very much. Some things they did know. They knew that little kids who came in liked stuffed animals and trucks and toys you could ride and toys you could climb into. They liked crayons and paint. They didn't like to put things away. They liked to hurl things around and to hurl themselves around and to sit on laps. So here are some rules about children, right? So in this sense, rules are patterns of behavior. And so not rule in the sense of a boundary, just rule, you know, rule in the sense of a pattern. And what is the content of their knowledge?
Experience, what they've seen.
Right, right. And they really get children, right? They get, you know, she's telling us they understand children to sit in laps. And kids, do they like putting things away? I don't think so, but many people do. And now, they were loud and possessive and self-centered, but they had learned somewhere when you grabbed a toy from another child, you had to shout, share!
That was great.
So what's that about? They knew the rules. So share, right? Right. So they're like, you know, the rule has been totally turned on its head. So we're going to see the children did their part in the rough ceremony of reunion. They have to give them back to parents that they know are less than terrific parents by producing, where the fuck's your cap? Did you make a mess like always? You know, so.
That's
yeah.
sad.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Like always.
Right, right.
They're saying the kids learned how to adapt to that. And they learned how to respond.
Yes, right, right.
So the kids
but
were benefiting from this very negative response of their caretakers, the parents. Yeah. I mean, if the kids learned how to adapt so that their moms. If they yelled at them, where's your cap? Did you lose your cap? And they pull it out, they're not going to be hit or
right.
yelled at by their mother or whoever's picking them up.
But
right.
she does say that something frightened could be felt to uncoil within a certain
extent. Oh, yeah.
Right.
So that they weren't
yeah.
happy about
right.
it.
Of course not.
Yeah, they weren't
and,
happy about it.
Right.
And we hear a little bit later that one of the children, when he or she sees her mother, she runs the other way. She runs to Donna. Yeah. Because, you know, the reunion is a rough ceremony here. Okay, and now we have the two. And Beth is saying to them, feel at home, realizing that this couple would not feel at home anywhere. Okay, and so here are these two very strange people who've walked in. They've never had what they call Puritans walk in. And why is the mother and daughter, why have they walked in?
Money.
They, you know, this is breakfast and lunch for them. They don't have enough to, you know, and the mother says, Senya, I think is how you pronounce it, Senya, says, you know, Donna's ladle supplements what we need, and so, and they need it.
Where are you reading?
So I am now on 93.
Okay.
Actually, bottom of 92. The pair didn't look needy, but the ladle's policy must hold. No prying. Okay, so that's another rule. Among the guests were a few batty gentlewomen who might well possess million-dollar trust funds, who probably lunched at the Ritz on the days that the ladle was closed. They were served without question. So, too, would this mother and daughter be served. It was the rule. So, sometimes rules can be beautiful. They can express the highest values that we have. They can give a person dignity, no matter what the context of that dignifying that they're doing. So I'm just going to rush a little bit, and then we'll slow down a little bit too. So turn to 94. At the top, but the person. Dale?
But the person who teaches has to take a test, and a curriculum has to be followed, and materials. Sydney would probably meet the requirements, Pantruck. I doubt she's designed to apply.
Okay, so this is about homeschooling, and so what do we know about seniors? I don't know if that's the way, but her educating of her daughter?
Homeschooling her.
She's homeschooling her, right?
She's probably pretty bright.
Pretty bright. She's giving her this magnificent education. She's taking her to the museums. She's, you know, this little girl is learning a lot of very wonderful things, history and so on.
What she's not learning is a mother and daughter relationship.
But she,
to some extent, not completely.
Okay, we'll see. So, we'll see.
It doesn't seem to be a lot of love between the
two. You don't think? Okay, well, I'll try to, yeah, see if
we
can.
She must be learning a lot being in this scenario, in this situation, you know, just observing life this way.
Right. Dad.
Yeah, I've seen it as royalty, because the rules that say you're qualified to be a teacher, if she were to submit to those rules, it would be a downgrading for her. She would deign to apply.
Deign to apply, right. And what this shows us is that some rules are irrelevant. You know, nobody's going to catch her homeschooling her child without credentials or without this or that. But yeah, okay, great.
Has anybody ever seen that spelled C-I-G-N-E? Why is it hitting me that that means swan?
In French, it is.
C-Y-N-G-E. So I just was thinking of the characteristics of a swan.
Right.
Supposedly they don't make noise.
Beautiful.
I take care of it. I don't know.
Since we're on names, Rhea, what's Rhea, the daughter's name?
Oh, that's like an ostrich. Rhea is like an ostrich.
Oh, yeah. That part I didn't know. Yeah. Rhea's Greek mythology. She's the earth mother. She's the goddess. She's the mother earth. Which is interesting because she's the daughter, right? Mm-hmm. She grows up very quickly in some respects. Go to 95. Judy, can you read from when Rhea did play? She played by herself.
When Rhea did play, she played by herself, arranged the dollhouse, or drew elaborate diagrams that looked like plans for lace tablecloths. Meanwhile, Senya actually did crochet, her hands and hook converting a ball of wheat-colored thread into a long, loose fabric. The ball of thread lay in a canvas sack, and the fabric she made dropped slowly into the sack, too. And so none of the staff knew whether Senya was making Afghan strips or dresser scarves or just yards of trimmings. The woman was as silent and as absorbed as her daughter. Once in a while, though, when one of the toddlers became difficult, she would put down her crocheting, rise from the chair, and pick up the whining or bawling or clamoring child. The child grew instantly quiet, either borrowing Senia's composure or becoming paralyzed with terror. After a few minutes, Senia set the youngster down and returned to her work, her scar glistening like the trail of a tear.
Okay, so we learn about her crocheting abilities. What else do we learn about her, Senia?
The visible scar.
Okay, so we've got a scar, right? So, but we don't know
why.
And she's, you know, remember that the last scar that we saw, right, was somebody who gave herself a grapefruit nick, right? So, you know, and that's one of the points of the story. We don't know. We don't know unless somebody tells us.
Well, she's caring also. She goes to the children that are upset and calms them.
Right. It's not as if she's, you know, I think Donna's going to accuse them of being, you know, too isolated from the world. But she hears the child's cry, which is the most important thing, right?
And children know if they're safe. They may be terrorized, but they know whether they're safe or not. And so the fact that she's repeatedly able to do this with a group of children mean that they've conveyed to these kids that they're safe and that they're not going to hurt them, that they're there. But they can occasionally be helpful.
Right. So there's a story, I think it's about the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, is it? Dad, you can let me know if I'm if I got this. His son and grandson were living with him, and the grandson was crying, but the son doesn't hear it because the son is immersed in study. And so the grandfather says to the son, if you can't hear the child's baby, all the Torah in the world is not going to help you. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's this idea of she can hear the cry of the child, which is a critical piece, and she a trail of a tear. Okay. Let's see. Ruth, do you want to read from the second to last line at the bottom?
Pam began to lead that one?
Yeah.
Pam began to lead after lunch discussions on subjects like self-esteem and expectations. Cassandra and her mother stopped coming to her. Over dessert one afternoon, Donna wondered aloud what had become of them. Her table erupted with answers. They went south. They went to New York. The grand took them back. She married that son of his. Donna was impressed by this group confabulation. She lit a rare cigarette. Cassandra and her mother would return, or else they would not. But all those explanations can't be true, said Michelle to Donna as she took away the dishes. Sure they can. Seriatim. It's not our business, Toots. Whose business is it? The parole officers. You've got to take some things as you find them, Michelle.
Right, right. And Michelle is one of the ones who sticks around when the other's passion has subsided, right? But, you know, she and she wants to dive in, so Donna has to teach her another rule of reality. But
I don't know, where does the scar come in? Did that come in before?
Yes.
When they first arrived.
The scar was very important.
Okay.
When they first arrived, that's the description of the
Well, it's
but you don't know where
right.
It's on page 91.
Yes. 91. Okay.
The second, the first paragraph face. At the end.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where is it? Oh, yeah. But the girl, 91. But the girl lacked the scar that 91. Ran down the left side 91. Of the woman's. Yeah, the which woman's is, face from lower lid to the middle of the cheek.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's the second time they've told us. Yeah. Yeah. So. The scar is significant, but there's a reality, and Donna is very well acquainted with that reality. And you know what is. This is not our business. This is not part of our mission here. And you
but
have to live
knowledge.
With that.
It's knowledge for the staff that somebody was violent with a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's maybe. Giving them information.
Maybe. It could have been an accident.
It
right.
Be. It
right.
might not be violence.
Right.
Could be the grapefruit knife.
Right. Right. Okay. And Ruth, can you keep going on 97 in the middle? The trouble swirled.
Sure. The trouble swirled and then settled. Donna got help from Michelle, who thereby escaped from the lawyer's reminiscences. By 3 o'clock, most of the children and their mothers had been bundled out. Beth and some volunteers were putting the kitchen to rights. Michelle was singing to Africa. Pam was managing to calm Elijah's gorgeous turquoise-eyed mother, who claimed that her social worker had recommended prostitution as a career. Donna was mopping the dining room.
Okay, so that sentence, trouble swirled and settled. It's such a beautiful sentence. And what does it tell us? I mean, it's such a beautiful way to describe what happens in this place.
Just the rhythm of the place.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it'll and then it'll settle down. That's the way it goes. And so it so Donna and friends are not fazed by that. It just, you know.
It's a bell curve.
Right, right.
Okay. I just want to. Something hit me hilariously, and it must be because of the hearing loss. But you know, the social worker recommending prostitution, you know, it wasn't true.
Right.
But over and over again in the workshops on hearing loss, people would tell me, my doctor told me not to get a hearing aid. No, my doctor told me not to get a hearing test.
Right, right. So we hear what we want to hear, right? Or we'd call it selective hearing, mm-hmm. right? Turn to 98. Let's see. But Donna, the second paragraph, but Donna, 98, second paragraph, but Donna thought that the girl, Dad, would you like to read?
Yeah, sure. but Donna thought that the girl would be better off in the classroom, learning to tolerate and interact and share. Schools weren't meant only for the likable. There must be a place for this scarily self-possessed miniature of her mother. Let Senior crochet in the corridor if the two couldn't bear separation. Yeah. Let them practice their queer habits somewhere else.
Okay, so here we have Donna's rules of living. And what's her approach?
She makes judgments.
Right, so first of all, yeah. I mean, the voice may be uncensoring, but the thoughts are very, you know, she has definite ideas. Better that the kid should be involved socially than getting the best museum education, humanities, and so on. So Donna has her rules what's good for children, right?
But she doesn't impose them on the people at her place.
Right, right, right.
Except to the extent of no hitting and
right.
No...
But not her
right.
views about
education. And stuff. Right.
Right.
If it's not an immediate issue, she doesn't deal with
right.
it.
Right.
I was surprised, though, by the characterization of likability, that schools weren't meant only for the likable. I don't know that Rhea was unlikable. She was strange, perhaps, but I don't know that she, you know, was
so
necessarily
where's
unlikable.
That coming from?
It's coming from Donna.
Donna doesn't like her.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, yeah. So that, yeah, it's a projection.
So is
yeah.
Donna thinking that they don't belong there?
As we see, yeah, a little
and
bit.
And that's what her gig is. It's like, what are they doing here? They
what are they doing here?
Here?
Right. But the rule of the place is we serve
we
without
serve
question.
Everyone.
So
right.
we will serve them too.
Right.
But she definitely has that idea. What are mm-hmm. they doing here? But if she's going to serve the millionaires, you
exactly.
know, she's going to serve them. Right. Okay. So on the right side of 98, Donna turned her thoughts to current problems. Barry?
Okay. Yeah. Donna turned her thoughts to current problems. The helping hands had dropped the ladle in favor of animal rights.
Okay, so here we're
yeah.
coming full circle, right?
Yeah.
The charity of the day, right?
The MEV's attendance had slackened, though Michelle remained faithful. The price of vegetables was going up. Even broccoli was almost out of sight. Mice were running free.
Some rules continue. They're timeless, right? Yeah.
Tomorrow, Thursday, might be a nightmare. Pam was to lead an after-lunch discussion of empowerment. And who knew what would ensue? Last month, the empowerment session had ended in disarray. The former lawyer had lengthily cited cases. Bitsy, in disgust, had poured iced tea down a new guest's back. Perhaps tomorrow's meeting would be more orderly. A representative from the governor's office had promised to drop in. Donna hoped he wouldn't get the iced tea.
Right, so her characters might have certain ideas, but when Edith Perlman describes, you know, the situation, Maeve's attendance had slackened. There's not so much judgment there. It's just the way things go. Mm-hmm. And you know, and she wants to tell us something, which she tells us, but she doesn't want us to judge it, probably because we might do the same thing. Okay, and so, but empowerment. What's the empowerment and self-esteem and so on?
It's the privilege of the rich.
Right, right, right. So
yeah, I thought it was also more their attempt to do something mm-hmm. to help awesome. These women.
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
More than just feeding
more
them.
Than
more than just
yeah.
feeding
yeah.
their
right.
selves and their brains.
Right,
yeah.
right, right. Right,
but
so, yeah, go ahead.
To some extent, it's a waste of time.
Right, yeah. sometimes it is.
I don't need any.
Right.
Right, so sometimes it is, and sometimes
it
isn't.
Maybe for some person it might help a little.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And there's no structure otherwise to their time there.
Right, right.
So,
right.
I mean, the most productive thing we've heard is the crocheting.
Right.
The least productive thing we've heard is the peppering. So they're trying to offer something in between.
Right.
What's she making?
No, it was to show her daughter that she was productive. I couldn't make it out. She was making anything.
Don't know. We don't know. Okay, 100. In the middle of the page, and now it was Friday afternoon, Jenny.
Free Food had just delivered several baskets of very soft tomatoes. The staff would stew them as soon as possible. Pam and Donna were separating the merely overripe from the absolutely rotten.
Right, so here too is, you know, their reality, right? And just skip to the top of 101, and actually the bottom of 100, most of the guests had left.
Most of the guests had left. The staff and the volunteers mopped the floors and cleaned the kitchen and stacked chairs and tables. Michelle, on her way to a weekend with her boyfriend, ran by, a toothy smile, a pair of fast denim legs. Oh, Donna, I forgot to put away the cleaning bucket in the children's room. Have to catch the bus, sorry. Donna waved her on and went into the empty children's room to fetch the bucket.
Okay, so Michelle might be, you know, the best in that she stuck around, but she's still a young person. Gotta go, see you later, you know, and meaning, and Donna's used to it. They're all used to it. You know, the buck stops with them. Volunteers are like icing on the cake. Okay, and then just, but the children's room wasn't empty. Harriet?
I don't know how to pronounce their names, sat on their low chairs facing each other. They were reciting something in words Donna couldn't catch, a tuneless but emotional song consisting of questions and responses. Sing. Intoned the questions. Rhea declared the responses. The children's eyes were closed, her sparse lashes long on her unmarked cheeks. Sing's eyes were open, watching the girl with consuming interest. You can't, Donna began, lurching forward, banging her shin on Michelle's pail.
Keep going.
Rhea opened her eyes. Both Sing and Rhea took turned to look at Donna, who was standing on one leg now, rubbing the other. We can't what, they seemed to be inquiring. What rule were they breaking? They were not drinking. They were not doping. They were not yelling. They were not striking each other. The tone of their liturgy was charged, but it wasn't abusive. How was Donna to finish her admonition? You can't look peculiar. You can't try to save your child from corruption. You can't pray.
So Donna has learned something. And what is it about, what's the role of rules here?
Well, here rules were interrupting what Donna wanted to do. Donna wanted them out, but there was no basis for them to stop whatever they're doing and to, you know, do what Donna liked. So here the rules were being turned on Donna.
Right. And also, what is the you can't? What's the what's implied by the you can't? What's she going to say?
That's it. She saw something that displeased her for her own reason, so her immediate thing was you can't. But then she couldn't really find what she's going to put her on. You can't be weird. You know, what are you going? They weren't really doing anything that was wrong.
But that's so important. The gut reaction.
Yeah.
Something is wrong here, but I can't figure it out. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, what rule were they breaking? Let's get some perspective here, right? Donna, who's, you know, the auntie, she doesn't want them to pray for her own reasons. She's starting to do her own thinking through of it. They're not drinking. They're not doping. They're not hitting each other. What about my priorities? I'm so concerned with how they pray, but they're doing everything right. There's no rule that they're breaking. And so I'm learning, Donna, if I'm Donna, that maybe I need to question my own rules.
Luckily the pail was there.
Right, to stop her. Thank God. Right. Sorry, she muttered, limping. She pushed the wheeled pail out of the children's room. The harsh duet resumed. Now, in her mind, it's harsh, but do we know what's being conveyed between them? We have no clue, and she has no clue. Rhea's words sounded like numbers. Perhaps she was reciting the populations of the world capitals. Perhaps she was calculating square roots. Mom, do you want to continue? It's bottom of 101.
At the same moment, a small figure with a heart.
Wait.
Whatever her catechism, it was soon over. Mother and daughter emerged now in their caves, while Donna was putting away a stack of newly washed tablecloth. At the same time, a small figure with half a dozen arms and legs whirled into the dining room from the area of the bathroom, capturing the attention of all three. It was Elijah in flight. He scooted diagonally across the empty dining room, a pinwheel shooting sparks. Then his mother ran in too, her now upbraided satin hair streaming over her knapsack, a hunchback bird. I'm gonna get you.
Okay. So so the pinwheel, what's the pinwheel? It's the arms and the legs that are, you know, it's such a wonderful way to describe it. Like he's just all over the place, right? And shooting sparks. What are the sparks?
Energy.
That's, you know, children. And he's Elijah, right? So he can fly. He can go anywhere. So, and then his mother ran in too, and we don't know if it's going to be good or bad. And it's, she's playing with him, which is just so wonderful. I'm going to get you a hunchback bird.
But it doesn't have to be. I'm going to get you playfully.
Yes, right. We don't know. Right. Except, yeah, that's right. We don't know yet. Okay. Wendy, there was a swoop.
There was a swoop. The pinwheel was caught, but his captor was not the raven, but the bat, Sinye. She held him high above her upturned face. He grinned down at her. Her cape hung in a column behind her. Elijah's mother skidded to a stop. My baby, she demanded. Rhea joined them. I a plane, shouted Elijah, flapping his elbows. Donna, I a plane. Rhea lifted her arms in imitation of her mother. Elijah's mother lifted her arms too. My baby, she said in a softer voice. Sinye placed Elijah in the girdle formed by Rhea's hands. Rhea held the child aloft for a moment, then passed him to his mother. She too held him briefly like a chalice before settling him onto her shoulder and marching out.
Okay, so we have the raven and the bat. What's the difference between the raven and the bat?
Bats are upside down. Ravens, I assume, fly up. So it's
right. So bats, I don't know bats anything about bats except, but they're actually mammals?
Yeah,
they're not. They're mammals, right. And they're the only mammal who can fly, right? Who can sustain flight, right? So she, you know, so this, she's the bat as opposed to the raven.
The bat also uses sonar or radar to
echolocation.
Navigate.
Yes, right. So she has this these extra senses, and she picks him up and he grins at her. So probably when they calm down, it's not terror they feel if he grins at her. But what has happened in this paragraph?
They're all interacting.
So they're all there. Donna's there and Rhea's there. Rhea lifted her arms in imitation of her mother, and then her mother gives Elijah to Rhea. And then she too, we're talking about the mother, held him briefly like a chalice before settling him onto her shoulder and marching out.
She totally diffused the situation. And in a way that was familiar to them all. I mean, so the daughter imitating the mother is not, I mean, we had other examples of her imitating her mother. We were pre-warned that Signe could calm the kids down and would step in when she needed to step in. And so when she stepped in, I get I'm going to get you not in a good way, because she stepped in, and not in the playful way. And that was set up by the peppering, because these mothers and grandmothers aren't always so nice to these kids. And we just, it's almost like this magical of, I thought about it at a bris sometimes. You see the passing the baby from generation to generation. And that's what came into my mind.
I thought about it about when you pass the Torah.
Same type of thing. Same type of thing. But it's something honored.
Right. So respected, this loved,
pinwheel
adored.
Became
absolutely
this honored.
Right.
Chalice. So she had been modeling.
Yes.
Modeling right. How to, mm-hmm. when the kid's going crazy or.
Right.
Don't just scold or just sort of take her calm. Yeah, just
right. And what is in the child's mind? I'm flying. I'm a plane. Right. I'm not disrupting. I'm not trying to, you know, make your day bad, Mom. I'm a plane. And then when the mother lifts him up like a chalice, you know, she too held him like they've taught her how to hold him like something holy, right? A chalice. He's, and she does it. You know, maybe she's not going to do it again, but for the moment, that's a critical moment.
Why do you think the bird imagery in those senses, that she, hunchback bird, it was a swoop, the raven,
the raven is kind of creepy, right?
Raven nevermore.
Right, so raven, and they eat carrion, and they right. eat, you know, so...
It started with her seeming to be a bird as well.
I don't know.
So I'm not sure why that thematically worked for her. I don't get it.
Right.
Well,
so
maybe it wasn't... His captor was not a bad person or mad. The captor was... Like a raven might be pictured as bad or mean, and she wasn't. She was quiet like a bat. I don't know.
Well, she also wears that cape.
I thought it was a reference to the cape.
And also, bats are misunderstood. Everyone thinks bats are bad and dangerous and evil, and they're not. Mm-hmm. They do some really good things for the environment.
Mm-hmm. They
do. Eat bugs.
I kind of thought of her as
so the bat is kind of repulsive, but a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like Signe.
Right.
Signe.
Yeah. Signe is the right. Signe. Her name means
Signe.
New victory.
New victory. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Finish us off.
Signe adjusted her cape. She turned to her daughter. They exchanged a long, silent stare, a gaze of peace and intimacy and intricately tangled pleasure.
Are you going to cry?
So beautiful. Yeah.
The space between them became briefly radiant. Donna, though blistered, watched. She wondered whether she would ever again pay honor to that meager virtue, getting along with people. She knew that she would never again claim to understand anything about mothers and children. They left. Donna walked into the kitchen. It would be a pleasure to stew tomatoes.
Right. So what has Donna learned?
Well, wait a minute.
What?
In defense of my mistake, this could be such a symbiotic relationship.
It could be.
Yeah, right. Description.
But peace and intimacy and pleasure.
Right.
Right.
That's a pretty nice combination.
I'll take it.
So, and it's a radiance.
Radiant.
It might be brief, but there's a radiance there. So what does Donna learn? Yeah, Deb.
Seeing the... She's a bat, and she's wearing a cape. Okay.
Oh,
so
Batman.
She's a superhero.
Yeah.
One other thing that she brings in at the very end. The people who eat at Donna's label dine on tablecloths.
Right.
Yeah.
I got that too.
Right.
Which is, I mean, for all they have to do to wash,
right.
to launder tablecloths
right.
so
right.
that they can eat.
Right.
It's
yeah.
elegant,
so,
isn't it,
right.
on tablecloths?
Right.
It's
nice.
Giving some respect.
Exactly. Yes, yes, right?
Well,
and they serve
guests.
Everybody. They're guests.
Guests.
They're guests.
Yes.
Right. And
right.
I love Donna blistering, though. I mean, you can
mm-hmm.
see the fire underneath and crackling, and it's like...
What's the she think? Wondered whether she would ever again pay honor to the meager virtue of getting along with people. She felt that Rhea should be in school so that she could make friends and everything like this. She realizes that, what do I know about this? I'm not going to like assume anything between mothers and children. I don't know. What she witnesses between mother and daughter is something that, you know, her eyes couldn't see before. Now they can see. You know, she can see what is happening here. And she can appreciate it because she didn't like Semya, right? And yet she can still see this. So she's, changing her understanding of this mother-daughter. What's the last line? It would be a pleasure to stew tomatoes until they burst through their skins. There's something she does understand, right? She knows tomatoes are going to burst through their skin. She might not know mothers and daughters. So again, and we've had this a number of times, things are not what they seem, or things are not what my eyes see necessarily and how I interpret them. And she comes out of the story with a little bit of humility. Which is something, you know, we all need in trying to evaluate relationships.
Well, she also understands what tomatoes are, but she doesn't understand what the skin of people are.
So just back to rules for a second. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that it's telling us about rules?
Sometimes they have to be redone or changed depending on, right. They're not set in stone.
If you're a person who can grow in this life, you're going to be able to reevaluate your own rules. And she had a rule and she realized that, you know, maybe it's not appropriate to this reality. And so she can change. That's something pretty speaking, you know, superhero, to be able to change, perspective. That is something really amazing. So some rules are made to be broken. Some rules are, there's the exception that proves the rule, right? The exception that proves the rule, right? So sometimes there can be exceptions to the rule, and sometimes the rules need updating. For the situation, in order to be effective, it has to be fitting to the situation.
What you said, Lonnie, about guidance, rules are guidance, they're not written in stone.
Right. So, other last thoughts?
I thought it was interesting that she wasn't a mother herself. There was no mention of her having children. Mm-hmm. Here she was knowing everything just from experience.
Yeah.
Which was, not realistic either.
Right. So, but she's willing to change. So once again, back to Pirkei Avot for a second. Sorry, I'm making you late. Judge people favorably, right? Until you know otherwise is, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there class next week for you? We have class next week. Yeah.
Next week.
Homeschooling. Yeah.
Madeline, this is yours.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well.